in Michigan politics. But first, it's safe to say 2012 was a pretty darn good year for the auto industry, especially if you compare it to, oh, say 2009. Profits at the Detroit Three are up, the companies are adding jobs, and car sales are rising slowly but steadily. Today, we're joined by Michelle Krebs, who's senior analyst with Edmunds.com, and Tracy Samilton, Michigan Radio's own Autobeat reporter. We're going to talk about some of the big auto stories from the past year. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you.
So let's start out with something that I think I've been hearing a lot of. I think we really have, and that's fuel efficiency. You know, it seems like car companies are building every new car to be more fuel efficient than the one that came before. And then this summer, we had the federal government finalize some strict new fuel economy standards, the CAFE standards. I want to start with you, Tracy. Just how strict are these new standards?
These are really strict, especially if you look at the end goal of 2025, when we're supposed to be getting 54.5 miles per gallon average.
That's average.
Average. So it translates to more like 49.5 miles per gallon because they're going to give the car companies credit for more efficient air conditioning systems. But even so, it's more than double really what we have now on our average. So it's a real stretch.
Yeah, because we're averaging about 24 miles a gallon if we're lucky.
That's right.
Michelle, how do we get there or can we get there?
Well, we'll see because there is a review period in 2017, so we'll see if those are revised. Certainly electrification of vehicles, and when I say that, I don't mean just a pure electric car. I'm talking about plug-in hybrids, hybrids, better batteries. There will have to be some technological breakthroughs, and there will have to be some cost breakthroughs because that technology is very, very expensive and consumers have balked at spending money on it.
And that's why I call this the magic wand thinking. I mean, we hope there are those cost breakthroughs. We hope there are those technological breakthroughs. But if we don't get them to the extent where we can meet the goal, what do? Give up
yeah.
the goal? Or do we start talking seriously again about increasing the cost of gas? Because it's the simplest way to get people to buy more fuel-efficient cars. It's considered political suicide in this country at this point. Maybe it won't be quite so much in by 2020, and we can see that we're not going to reach our goal. I don't know.
It's hard to envision that right now. And a gas tax has been talked about back in the Lee Iacocca days,
yeah.
and it's never happened. And wow, in this environment,
I'm a dreamer.
I guess you are. I can't see it happening.
And I do think the American car buying public really it really is a short memory when it comes to gas prices. And I just saw $3.05 yesterday. Wow. I mean, we were flirting with $4 not so long ago.
I would argue that I think that we are at a tipping point. Typically, what we see is when gas prices go way up, people buy small cars and hybrids.
Mm-hmm.
As soon as they come back down, people start buying SUVs and trucks. That has not happened this time. November, gas prices were pretty darn low, and people bought small cars in big quantities. That surprised us. So I think that there is a shift in thinking that people want fuel economy. Maybe it's because we've been through a recession and people are in tighter budgets, or they just don't want the volatility of gas prices in their household budget.
Do you think people have learned, gee, we can drive a car versus an SUV? Have we perhaps moved beyond
our... There's some of that going on.
There's some of that, but there's also the SUVs today aren't the same as they were. The Ford Explorer today is not the Ford Explorer.
Yeah, it's 25% more fuel efficient.
And what we're going to see is we've seen a lot of fuel efficiency in the small cars. Now we're seeing it mid-sized cars. It's moving to large cars. And there's a lot of work going on in the pickup truck category even.
Let's switch over. Something that we really heard a lot about was the auto bailout during the presidential race. The drumbeat sounded in the auto companies were saying, stay away, no photo ops. We don't want to be a part of all of this. We do not want to be the poster children. And we did actually have the CEOs of two of our Detroit Three issue statements to counter some of the claims being made of the campaign trail. Michelle, in your career, have you ever seen anything like that past campaign season?
I have never seen the auto industry so politicized, or a vehicle like the Chevrolet Volt being a poster child for political polarization. It's quite amazing.
I came into being the Autobeat reporter right before the bankruptcy, so I can't say that this seemed abnormal because bankruptcy seemed normal to me. But yeah, it was, and the claims that were being made were just so patently absurd in many cases.
On both sides.
Yeah.
right? Or yeah, more but, one but side than the other?
I mean, Jeeps being shipped off to China for all Jeeps being constructed in China when just we were, you know, Chrysler's been making these big investments in the Toledo plant and that makes Jeeps and that kind of thing.
Yeah. The Obama administration, their campaign did make much of a headline that Mr. Romney never said. That was the big lie on their side, is that he never said, let Detroit go bankrupt. He actually argued for a structured bankruptcy, just like we had.
And I dare say, has ever a headline left more impact, a headline that he did not even write?
Right. It was written by the paper itself.
And I think we have to, as we talk about that, the fact that GM's going to be buying back 200 million government share. Talk a little about GM's recovery and the overall picture.
Well, I think that them buying back their stock and getting the government out of the business is a huge milestone in this journey. It closes that when it's all said and done, which is going to take some months, it'll close that chapter. It'll free GM to do more things. I've never been clear on how much that impacted consumers buying GM vehicles.
I think it impacted the folks in GM psychologically. When you talk to people sort of just off the record about what it means, they are so anxious to get rid of this nickname Government Motors and just be GM again. And to me, that's the main impact this is going to have.
And there are practical things. I mean, way more paperwork. They can't pay people more than the government says, which is difficult in terms of keeping people and recruiting people. So there are some nuts and bolts. But the consumer who won't go to a Chevy dealership because GM got a bailout, I think they're few and far between. I may be wrong, but I think that seems
well,
to me.
I think if you look at how they recovered from the bankruptcy so quickly, you can make that argument that consumers really did not punish GM very much for
that. And I think the consumer is looking for a quality vehicle at a great value. It's simple.
If you're just joining us, this is Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty, and we're looking back at 2012 in terms of the auto industry as we talk with Michelle Krebs. She's a senior analyst with Edmunds.com. And then Tracy Samilton is with us, Michigan Radio's Auto Beat reporter, talking about consumers going to showrooms and looking back at the year. Car sales and auto activity really has helped power America's economy, hasn't it, Michelle?
Well, absolutely. I mean, we've seen that over the last couple of years. Consumer spending has been driven largely by, which is a big segment of the economy, has been driven by car sales. And nothing seems to, no matter what happens economically, car sales keep going on.
Yeah, there's just this continual slow release of all this pent-up demand. And it really is picking up the economy much more than I think it's being given credit for. Treasury, I think it was the first quarter of this year, said that the GDP of the GDP growth we saw that quarter, half of it was due to auto sales and auto manufacturing. Half.
We have to spend some time talking about the Chevy Volt. You know, it became fodder for politicians, certainly, as we just talked about. But it really is an interesting, it's a groundbreaking car. And I understand you both got a chance to tool around in a Volt for a week. So you each have a Volt story. I want to start with yours, Tracy.
Okay, well, my story is how I took GM at their word that this is a car you can do anything in. So, you know, when you can drive for about 40 miles on battery and then it kicks over to a gas generator and you can drive for many, 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 many more miles on the gas. And the week they gave me the car, I was going on a camping trip in Pennsylvania. After 40 miles, you know, on the highway, it turned over and I couldn't really tell. And I drive, I fill up with gas like a regular car. And then I get to the campsite and it's this little dirt road. And then to get to my actual cabin, it looked like a 45-degree hill.
Ooh, up the hill.
I'm thinking, you know, if you count the R&D costs for this car I'm driving, it's probably a $1 million car. And I'm like, I'm really going to do this. But, you know, GM says, do anything with this car that you would do with your normal car. So I drove it up and there's my cabin and it has electricity and I plug it in. So I even have a photo of the Chevy Volt plugged into my rustic cabin. And, you know, for most of my trip, I drove it on the battery. And then coming back, I drove it mostly on gas. And that is exactly how it's intended to be used.
Very, very livable. What's your story, Michelle?
Well, it's short and sweet. I had the Chevy Volt, had it plugged into the plug in my garage. Mm-hmm. What I didn't realize is that same line is not, it's not a dedicated line for the garage. It's connected to my bathroom. And when I plugged in my hair dryer, poof,
everything
blew a circuit. I'm told it wasn't the Volt. It was the hairdryer that draws a lot of electricity.
That's pretty funny. So the moral of the story is if you're going to have that pet baby plugged in, just pay attention to where you plug in your hairdryer.
Exactly.
Let's talk about in the next few weeks. Anybody in the auto industry, certainly attention is going to be heading to the North American International Auto Show coming up. So what big news, Michelle, are you expecting to see?
Well, first of all, I think the mood will be very good because we'll be coming off a very good year, and we're anticipating, if we get by all this fiscal cliff stuff, another really good year. And I think we'll the theme, again, will be fuel efficiency for everything. But we'll see a lot of luxury cars. We're going to see sport utilities. It's all over the map.
So the funereal mood of, like, the 2010 auto show is
history.
Thankfully.
They may actually feed the media this year. Yeah.
There might be shrimp.
Ooh.
And what about you, Tracy? What are you looking forward to with the auto show?
Well, I guess Cadillac has an electric coupe.
It's called the ELR, and it's based on the Chevrolet Volt technology.
Yeah, so I think that'll be really interesting to see. And then poor Lincoln is going to be showing a crossover, and they haven't been getting very good reviews for their sedans. So let's hope this crossover does a little better for them. I'm hoping that people are enthusiastic about it.
We've been talking cars with Michelle Krebs, senior analyst with Edmunds.com.